Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The economic downturn isn't easy for anyone. The jobs lost, markets down, screaming headlines, fear. American kids have never seen anything like it. Here's 17-year-old Fernando Bustos of San Lorenzo, California.
We spend less and we have to save more money since we can't like buy all these brand foods and at these high prices right now. And since my dad was laid off of work a couple months ago, now we have to adapt to this new way of living and saving money.
Whether they're 7 or 17, young Americans are paying attention. They're watching and listening and being shaped. This hour, On Point, American Kids and the Economic Crisis. You can join the conversation. How are your kids taking the crisis on board? What are the questions in your house over lost jobs, tight budgets? How are you dealing with your kids' hopes and fears in tough times? We will hear in this hour from young Americans around the country thanks to Youth Radio. They send out kids to interview kids for us about the crunch. Let's listen to a few. 15-year-old Ashley Trent lives in New York City, says her family is working together to save money.
When the recession started really hitting, basically my parents and my brother, we all came down to the sitting room and had family talk and discussed on ways that we could just like really pinch everything so we wouldn't have to think about where we're going to get our money from next. We just wanted to like really like spread our money really far out.
Time to spread that money out. Here's 16-year-old Cheyenne Johnson in Atlanta, Georgia. She says times are tough for her and her mother.
The economic crisis has affected me severely because I'm trying to find a summer job and it's kind of hard because, you know, McDonald's, Burger King, all the fast food places are taken by adults who are trying to find a job barely. And I want to work so badly because my mom, she's making me pay for my school clothes, well, half of them, and then I'm trying to buy a car. My mom's always the one who works hard and we can still make it because she has two other jobs and she's looking for a third one, you know, and it pays off in the end, so she works hard.
Mom with two jobs and looking for a third, and here's 16-year-old Devin Glenn in New York, worried about his ability to pay for college.
I really don't think that I'll be able to pay for college. My family doesn't have the money to pay for the colleges that I want to go to, and this situation that we're in right now doesn't seem to be getting any better in the next couple of years, and hopefully it won't get any worse because that would just be disastrous.
We all hope, and the kids too. We're talking today about kids in the economic crisis. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. What are your kids asking? What are you telling them? How much do they know about what's going on with the American, with the global economy? With us today from Portland, Oregon, is Sue Schellenberger. She's the work and family columnist for the Wall Street Journal and an old friend. Sue, great to have you back. Thanks very much for being here.
It's great to be with you, Tom.
And with me in the studio is Margie Mitlin. She's a licensed social worker in independent practice and works as a counselor at the public high school in Sharon, Massachusetts. Margie Mitlin, thank you so much for coming in.
Hello, Tom. Thank you so much for inviting me here today.
Sue, you've got your finger on the pulse of families and people and work right across the country. What are you hearing about kids' questions and what they're being told?
Well, Tom, I'm getting so much email and queries through our blog from parents who are wondering, what do I say to my child? And, of course, this varies by developmental stage. And I think parents, by and large, are figuring out new skills as they go to talk to their kids about money in ways that they have not done before. And this, of course, varies by the age of the child. What you can say to a toddler is very different from what you can say to a teenager.
Margie, I think you sat down just in recent days with high school age kids. What's on their minds?
I think, like everything else, a lot of times high school students don't necessarily directly talk about what's happening in the economy unless you ask them. If you ask them, you get a lot of answers.
Are they tuned in? Are they paying attention?
They're definitely paying attention. They're paying attention to the stress in their households. They're paying attention to the fact that they're trying to get jobs, and they're finding that those jobs are being taken by adults, just like one of the students said earlier. I think that they're picking up on the stress that everyone's family is dealing with on every level.
So what kind of questions are you getting from parents when they're thinking about what to tell or not to tell their kids, 7-year-old kids, 12-year-old kids, 17-year-old kids?
What are my kids picking up is what parents want to know. And some of them falsely think they can be heroic and shield their children from the effects of a layoff or an income cut. They can't. Kids are like little sponges. They soak up the emotional climate at home, and parents do notice that their children may seem tense. So what they're doing, and by and large, is sitting down to talk to them about, the best thing they can do is to, first of all, give them the facts in an age-appropriate way. You know, here's what's happening. You know, Daddy won't be going to his job at the same place anymore. He's going to be home here working very hard, trying to find a new place to work. We're going to be fine. And here's what you can do to help. You know, maybe we can shop together at the grocery outlet and, maybe try to save a little money on food. Three key steps there: affirm what the child is seeing, reassure them that the family will be okay, and give them a way to help out. I think this is what a lot of parents are learning to do.
But how do they do that, Sue, in a time when the headlines on too many days are so outrageous that even adults are not quite sure how everything's going to all work out, are they?
Well, a lot of parents are taking the 911 cure and turn off the TV. I mean, I've actually talked to many families where the TV goes off when the kids come home because even the most avid news buff realizes that a child is going to pick up these signals of alarm. It can simply be too much for a kid to process. So that's one thing that parents are doing. The second is to pull together as a family. I think one of the key things parents are trying to remember is that the child wants to be reassured that mom and dad are okay. They want mom and dad to be emotionally stable. Mm-hmm. Second, they want their relationship with mom and dad to be okay. And third, they want to know that the family is okay in the long run. And studies have shown long term over many recessions of the past that this is what enables a kid to get through without lasting damage. They don't care so much about not having an allowance anymore. They want to make sure that their foundation stone, the family, is going to be okay.
So the essentials they want to hear are okay, even if adults may wonder about that sometimes. Margie, what about information? Do young people want the information about what exactly is going on with the jobs, the savings, the prospects, the financial tensions, the budget in a family? Do they want to know some of that, all of it? You look at high school kids and talk to them. What do you think?
It's funny that you should say that. I was just talking to a number of students about that subject, and I think that some students want to know more than they do know. They feel like they're picking it up. They feel the tension, but they don't have the facts. And when they don't have the facts, they have vivid imaginations, and they imagine the worst, and they start drumming up scenarios where they think that they're not going to be able to go to college, and they're not going to be able to have some of the things that they've had. So I think that they imagine the worst, and the lack of information, I think, becomes really confusing to them in many ways. Some students have said to me that they really prefer not to know, that their parents sometimes tell them too much,
mm-hmm.
and they feel burdened by that information, and they would prefer to tune it out. So I think that something in the middle probably would be good. They would be reassured by having some information.
And when you sit with them, do they know the stories of people laid off, of people whose businesses aren't going well?
They definitely do. They know it in their own families. A lot of their own parents have been laid off, and so they see it. They know that it's real. But, again, I agree with Sue when she says that what they really need is to be reassured that although it looks like the bottom is falling out, that the reality is that there are some constants that they can depend on, and they need that reassurance right now.
We're going to talk about how this whole experience may shape this generation coming up in the teeth of this crisis, but let's get some real-world report here from Laura, Townsend, Massachusetts. Laura, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have 9 kids. 6 are still at home, and we were middle-class Americans up until my husband was laid off 10 months ago. And I have a child that's been accepted to 4 universities. And the excitement last fall was, you know, getting ready for this. And now we've looked at the economy has taken more than half of her college savings away, and we can't supplement her. I mean, we get free lunch at school. I work two jobs, but I don't barely make enough to make the mortgage payment. And we've explained it to our kids, you know, what's on the table is a lot different than what it was a year ago, but there's so much uncertainty. I mean, there's no job that we can even look at in the horizon, and everybody's feeling that. We don't talk about a vacation. We don't talk about what fun we might have on a day off. You know, we play a lot of board games.
And do the kids want to talk about it, Laura, or do they not want to hear about it? It's just too much for them to take on board. Or does it depend on their age? You've got nine. You've got the whole range.
Well, you know what? The older kids, it's been pretty amazing. They have stepped forward. Like when it was time to pay for a program at school, the daughter that's getting ready to go to college has a part-time job, and she just comes to me and she says, I'm ready to pay half. Are you able to pay half? And we have an adult child living at home, and he stepped up and said he needed to pay rent. So the older kids get it. I think the younger kids don't want to know that much. And so we've not shared much. You know, they know that they don't like the yucky food they get at school. And they used to think that the grass was greener. Free lunch sounded good until you'd have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But they know it's how we make the bills. But I just wish that I could tell them by summer it would be better.
And no kidding.
And unemployment is ending for us.
Unemployment benefits. And what about what's on the table? Can they really see it in what you're serving for lunch, for dinner?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the snacks aren't there in the cupboard. You know, we do make sure that there's always apples and bananas. But, you know, the things that you just took for granted, there was always a box of Cheez-Its and things like that. We just have to be very careful. Nobody's going to starve. And, you know, we make sure that they have what they need. But wants, well, don't talk about those.
Laura, you've got a big crew there and a lot of young minds to grapple with in your own household. Thank you for calling. We're looking at that same dynamic, 9 or 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 right across the country. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about kids in the economic crisis, how to talk to them about what's going on and how the crisis may shape their outlook on life, perhaps as a generation. Sue Schallenberger is with us from the Wall Street Journal. She writes the Work and Family column. Margie Mitlin is with us, social worker, works in Sharon Public High School in Massachusetts. Youth Radio sent its young reporters out around the country for us to help us hear from young Americans about how they're taking it all on board. Here's 18-year-old Kelly Chow, Oakland, California, saying she's extra careful about how she spends money now.
I really had to cut back on my spendings, on clothes specifically. I would usually buy, like, you know, 3 sets of clothes each month. Now I can only buy 1 set every couple of months. Doesn't mean I'm going to necessarily go buy less fashionable clothes or junkier clothes, if you may. It just means that I'm either going to buy what I like or not buy anything at all.
Maybe not buying anything at all. Here's Ashley Trent again in New York saying the economic downturn has affected her in positive and negative ways.
In the negative, I have to be more frugal when it comes to spending money because I will have to think about next week if I want to spend it somewhere else that's more important or more, like, if I need it more. So, and then in positive, because now I'm a stronger person. I've been through, like, harder times and stuff like that, and also it's making me more financially responsible, and I think that will make my parents proud.
Ashley Trent in New York City. Again, thanks to Youth Radio. You can join us. How do you think this recession or whatever it is now, depression, will shape the generation growing up in the midst of it? We're at 800-423-8255. What's the conversation in your house around your kitchen table? Let's get a call from Lincoln, Nebraska. And Sue, hi, Sue in Lincoln, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yes, I'm calling to say that when I was 15 in 1981, my father lost his job. He was a steel worker, and so he lost his job during that scale back. And I was just saying to whoever took my call that I'm 42 years old, and I'm just recovering financially from that in a way. About 5 years ago, I'd say that I got fully on track. It took me all that time. My family was lower middle class to start with, and we were thrown into poverty from that.
I managed to go to school. I work at the university here, and but it took me a long time. That's my comment.
So it left a big imprint with you, and we will look at exactly that, Sue. Let's hold that thought for just a second and get another call here. Lexington, Massachusetts. Laura, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. This is a wonderful and important topic that you're covering.
Good. What's your story, Laura?
Well, the best and the worst moment of this global financial crisis is the exact same one for me and for our family, and that's when my 18-year-old daughter, who's in her freshman year at college, called and said, Mom, I'm going to send home all the money I make from my work-study job.
Wow.
And she said she can just manage at college with no money at all, and she, you know, is sending her paychecks home to us.
In other words, that's for her, and does she have siblings still at home that are now...
Yes. Well, I have an 11-year-old daughter, and in the exact same month, I found an extra $100 in my wallet that came out of nowhere. And as I searched it out and hunted it down, it turned out it was my 11-year-old daughter had taken all of the money from her Hello Kitty wallet and put it in my wallet.
Oh, Laura, you're killing me. Those are great stories, though. Thank you very much for sharing them. Margie Mitlin, you talk with high school kids all the time. Do they want to step up? We just got a story. You know, there's the daughter in college. There's the daughter at home emptying her Hello Kitty wallet for mom and dad. Do kids want to do that?
I think they definitely want to do that. I think they want to help out in any way that they can. And one of the ways that they feel like they are helping out is by becoming less of a financial burden on their parents. And so a lot of them talk about getting jobs and trying to pay for whatever it is that they need on their own. And if they can't afford it on their own, they do without it.
Does it give them a sense of, I don't know, empowerment?
I think so.
To chip in somehow.
Yeah, I really do think that they feel like they are contributing and they're trying to ease the burden. They feel it and they want to do something about it. And by doing all kinds of jobs, sometimes regular jobs, but also anything, even babysitting mm-hmm. or walking dogs or anything that they can do to help out, they do.
And Sue Schellenberger, what about our Sue from Lincoln, Nebraska? Her father was laid off in 1981. She's 42 now, and she feels like his layoff way back then has had a real economic impact, financial impact on her life until maybe right up until now. You've been writing about this recently, Sue.
Well, research would bear out Sue's experience, and your heart has to go out to her. I mean, a very fine award-winning study out of University of North Carolina took a look at some deep data sets from the Great Depression and followed those children forward for decades, and much depended on how old the child was when the Depression hit. And if you think about, you were just talking about resiliency, you know, mm-hmm. planting the seeds of being of self-sufficiency in a child. Different ages of kids are positioned in different ways to learn from these setbacks. And Laura's kids, her teenagers, in some ways are best positioned to benefit almost from a setback because they are actually able to help out, but they're not out there in the job market getting hit by the, you know, the tornado of change, where Sue probably was at an age where she had to move out into the job market. She was affected by the economic decline. Kids who are just graduating from college now are probably going to be hit the hardest. Teenagers perhaps will have a chance to learn resiliency by chipping in and helping the family, but they'll be spared the worst of it. And then for the very small children, they can't really help out in a real way. That's where I think the burden is greatest on mom and dad to set an example, as you talked about earlier, how difficult this is of hope and resiliency, because those little kids are simply looking to mom and dad for their identity. So history has shown us that much depends on how old the child is when a recession hits. That will shape the impact on the child to some extent.
We're going to hear in just a moment from a historian, economist, demographer about how generations are shaped by experience and bring experience into times like these. Here again from Youth Radio is here's an 18-year-old, DeMarcus Butler, Atlanta, Georgia. He's worried about paying for college, but is still hopeful things will work out by the time he enters the workforce.
Going to college, it means I have to look harder for scholarships and grants because I'm not trying to let this economic crisis, as it may be, prevent me from going to school. I'm trying to go into graphic design, and my thought process is, like, they can't outsource creativity, so hopefully it'll still be around by the time I'm ready to get into the workforce.
They can't outsource creativity, says DeMarcus Butler in Atlanta, Georgia. Who knows what can be outsourced, but he's thinking carefully about what can survive in career terms, the challenges that are out there right now. It's really interesting. Let's go to Susan in Manorville, New York. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. What do you know, Susan?
I was just listening to the young man talking about college, and that's precisely why I called. I have five children, one who's about to enter college in September. And in our family, although the economic downturn has been painful, it's actually helped open my kids' eyes to the choices they're going to make for their own future. We've been reading the economic magazines and the papers, seeing where the hot professions are in the future. And my children, you know, their 529 has shrunk considerably, so they're also making painful choices and choosing perhaps state schools. They have to find a job where the study and the money that they invest is going to pay off in 4 years from now.
So it's a kind of get real moment. Are you glad for that, or do you see them sort of, you know, downsizing their dreams? How do you look at that?
No, absolutely not downsizing their dreams. I'm actually very glad for it because, the 18-year-old who's about to enter college in September, very bright, A student in school, she wanted to go into the music industry for a very long time because she likes music and she, you know, she's a good little business girl there. Now she's looking into the healthcare industry and even pre-law. And I told her, look, you know, you could still perhaps one day, if you want, still work in that industry, but in a different capacity. You know, make sure that the money you spend now for college, you're going to have, you know, an ability to pay back your student loans, which is something we had not needed to consider several years ago. But now, you know, she knows she has to pay for part of her way in school. And she's taking a greater responsibility mm-hmm. in her own future. And I'm happy for that because that's the way life is. Mom and dad isn't always going to be there to support them financially.
Kids getting practical in the face of crisis. Susan, thanks very much for your call. So Schellenbacher, Margie Mitlin, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Great Falls, Virginia, Neil Howe. He's an historian, economist, and demographer who focuses on generational change in America and on long-term fiscal policies. He's a founding partner of LifeCourse Associates, a consulting firm there, and a senior associate at the Center for Strategic Studies. He's written a lot about different American generations, the Millennials Rising, one of his most recent book. He also wrote The Fourth Turning, The 13th Generation. Neil Howe, thank you very much for being with us.
It's great to be here, Tom.
We look back and have for years on the Great Depression and how it shaped a generation that then went off to war in World War II, became known as the greatest generation savers, some of whom never went back into the stock market. How do you see what's being shaped in the forge of this crisis or what young people are already bringing to the crisis, even if they're just in their teens?
Well, I think a lot of the important themes have been covered here. This is obviously a wonderful a set of learning moments after the 1990s and after the excess and sort of the all of the emphasis upon consumption and things that diverted us from what was really important in life. A few things I think will be especially important, at least drawing from the Great Depression, drawing from the 1930s. One is and you're just focusing on some of the positives. Family solidarity. This is one of the things that, the silent generation, the children born in the late 1920s and 1930s, this is the generation just too young, really, to participate in World War II. They, mm-hmm. they really came of age after the war was over. And they were really the children of that era, particularly the small kids when the Depression first hit. What they learned was an intensely close family experience. Many of them, of course, could never really get jobs. It was in this era that both the 1920s and the 1930s that we invented allowances. You know, this was an invention to keep kids out of the labor market, first because we thought that the labor market really wasn't good for small kids, and later on during the Depression because, of course, there weren't any jobs for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that happened was that they spent a lot more time in school.
In other words, went to school for more years?
Went to school for more years. This generation, particularly if you look at the contrast between those born in around 1900 to those born in the late 1920s, you see the share that got high school diplomas increased from about 15% to 50%. This is the single one-generation largest leap in the educational achievement.
And what about their outlook on life, their attitudes? How do recession or even depression tend to shape? Is it possible to say, are there consistencies that emerge in generations that grow up in the teeth of economic hard times?
You know, it really varies. It varies according to what else the generation is learning about the society they're living in. We've had two great examples, really, in this century of generations as young kids hitting economic hard times. One is the Silent Generation, and what did it learn? It learned avoid risk, trust in the establishment, and keep your head down. You know, this is mm-hmm. the generation famous after World War II for saying, you know, we didn't come to change the system. We just wanted the system to work better. Fortune magazine came out with a story in 1949 about the college class of 49 taking no chances. And there's a great sense of not letting anything go on your permanent record, keeping your head down, not drawing attention to yourself. And that sense of conformity and risk aversion became famous, I mean, by the late 50s, of these young kids, now, of course, as young adults. Another great
example. Do you imagine that coming out in this new generation, or are they going to have to be risk-takers to revive this economy?
The alternative, of course, the alternative case we have is Generation X. These are kids born in the 1960s and 70s, and we actually had one of the callers who was age 15 in mm-hmm. 1981. Mm-hmm. You remember who's now 42. Mm-hmm. That is another group that got hit. We had three recessions in a row, one that peaked in 1975, another in 1980, and then, of course, the bad one, which was 1982-83. That all hit sort of the Ford-Carter years and then the big Reagan recession, unemployment peaking at just over 10%. And it's interesting to look at the lessons that generation took.
Let's get a call right in here and then look at the lessons there. TJ in Braintree, Massachusetts. You're on the air, TJ.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I am a 21-year-old, almost out of college, work at a manager position almost full-time for a retail location, and up until 2 months ago, I had a promised job from my father's company that he was the CEO of. It was a construction firm, and he promised me a job in the business side of it.
And future so bright you had to wear shades. Dad was CEO of a construction company. What happened?
That's right. Up until 2 months ago, in the last 2 months, my father went from making $135,000 a year to calling me his son and asking him if my company could hire him in a retail position because he had no other prospects.
What happened? Did the company go down?
The company went down. They expanded too quickly in 2008, thinking the market would rebound. And the housing market in Massachusetts, as you know, collapsed along with the rest of the country.
And now he wants to work in retail with you, maybe under you. What about your future, TJ?
Well, my future, again, just like I think as many callers have said, with people my age, I'm concentrating a lot on my family and what my family's going to have to go through in the next few years. I have two older sisters, one who's raising a child on her own. And, you know, she's looking for new jobs, too. Luckily, she's in the healthcare field.
TJ, we wish good luck to you and your dad and the whole family there. But, wow, Margie Mitlin, I mean, this is it. This is reality coming right down on a 21-year-old. Not just his own future he's suddenly worried about, but his dad's, his own dad's, maybe next paycheck.
There is a reality, and I think what he said is really key, and Neil said it too. It's important to be focusing on the positive, and I think pulling the family together, supporting one another, trying to figure out how you can help, but even if you can't help, there's something that you can do just being together, figuring out ways. Somebody said earlier, sitting around and playing board games, letting people know that your family is still intact and that people are going to be taken care of, I think is really key.
But Sue Schellenberger, I mean, there's a call that makes it plain. This is not an academic exercise. This is hard reality hitting people, including kids.
TJ's dilemma is really a very common one. I think it's worth, the more we know about this, the more we can guard against the effects, right? And past studies do show, Yale University and elsewhere, that graduates who enter the job market in the recession tend to make less money for at least a decade. In fact, one very large study found 9% lower wages among kids whose parents were laid off or are in TJ's position over the course of a couple of decades compared with those who weren't hit hard.
We've got to take a break here, Sue. We'll come back and get it. Buck up, everybody. Sue Schellenberger, Margie Mitlin, Neil Howe, please stand by. We're talking about kids in the economic crisis. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. talking this hour about kids in the economic crisis, how to talk with them about what's going on, and how the crisis may shape their outlook on life. Youth Radio has gone out around the country, sent kids out with their tape recorders to talk with others about how they see what's going on. Here's 15-year-old Assyria Shabazz, a high schooler in New York City.
The recession has impacted me because I hear about it a lot at school. A lot of people are running around. They're like, oh my goodness, what's going to happen to my finances? How am I going to take care of myself? Like, I hear lots of old people, elderly people talking about how they're going to pay for Social Security. And there's lots of young people worrying about, like upper class, oh, what about, you know, my inheritance? How will this affect, like, my financial situation?
Everybody's talking about it, and, oh, what about my inheritance? Here's 18-year-old Amina James, Berkeley, California, worried about her future.
I was thinking about going to college, but now I'm not so sure. Things really hit home for me when I was sitting in a circle in my class and we were talking about student loans and how much college is going to cost and how we all, most of us in the class, are not able to afford college and our parents don't make a lot of money, and we just got like really worried. And my mom is like, oh, you better apply for as many scholarships and grants as you can because I have no money. And it's like, man.
Amina James taking it all on board there. And one more here. 16-year-old John Von Gall from Atlanta, Georgia, blames the recession for having lost his restaurant job. He has some advice for American consumers.
People need to spend money or the economy won't get any better. I spend all my paychecks in a day on the economy. So, I mean, I hope people do the same. Stop. Taking all your money out of the stock market and out of the banks, or it'll just cause a downward spiral.
Come on and spend so maybe John can get his job back at the restaurant. The Wall Street Journal's Sue Schellenberger is with us this hour. She writes the Work and Family column there, a terrific columnist for the Wall Street Journal. Margie Mitlin is here. She is a counselor in the Sharon Public High School in Massachusetts and a licensed social worker with her own independent practice, talks to families and kids. Neil Howe is with us, historian, economist, and demographer who focuses on generational change in America. He joins us from Great Falls, Virginia. Let's get a call right now from Arrington, Virginia. And Kate, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I love your show.
Thank you.
I love all these comments about the older kids and how they're helping out their families, but I'm a mom of a 13-year-old stepdaughter and two young boys, and since I lost my job, I've really cherished the time that I get to spend with them. For some of us, it's actually a better thing. We're growing our own food. I have a flock of chickens. I'm watching my sons, you know, enjoy a different kind of life than I might have been able to provide if I was working full-time and paying for both of them to go to daycare.
So you're taking away some kind of wholesome goodness in hard times? It's like, remember that TV show, The Waltons, years ago? It sounds like you're raising chickens. I mean, is it on balance a good thing, or just a change that you're saying has upsides?
This is a change that is unexpected and that I didn't know that I would have wanted. I knew I wanted, you know, to be more sustainable, but I wouldn't have the freedom to be with my sons and watch this. And it's just great for some of us, though it's more stressful. It's great for some of us to be able to be around our kids more.
Yeah.
And we're giving them a different perspective on life, not just by scrimping and saving, but we're giving them a different perspective on life by participating more in their lives.
Kate, thank you very much for your call. Sue Schellenberger, how about it? Hard times, lost job, raising chickens, maybe for the eggs. I remember that growing up. But the upside of the greater, family solidarity was the phrase that somebody used, maybe Neil Howe?
Absolutely. I think some of the most sanguine families I talk to are those who have been teaching their kids all along, always live a little below your means and you will be safer. I think for families who've had the wisdom to do that, to live sustainably, to always hold back, to not take that extra mortgage, right now they're grateful that they did and can reinforce those lessons with their kids.
Let's get a call from Angelo in Reevesville, South Carolina. Angelo, what do you know?
Well, I've been listening to the program here, and I don't usually call in, but, you know, I hear a lot of the callers. I think you're out of touch with reality. You know, I hear people say make a big deal about raising a few chickens to get some eggs. And, geez, where I live, that's a common thing. And, you know, I heard one caller, she was moaning about only being able to go and buy one set of clothes. And, you know, they were new. I know a lot of people that go to the thrift store. You know, they're happy to be able to have a few bucks to go to the thrift store.
Fill the closet at the Salvation Army, yeah.
Yes, exactly. You know, you go to the Salvation Army store, you know, and it's like they think it's a great tragedy. Well, what's happened here in America, I'm not sure about the rest of the world, but you had people that pushed the price of housing, you know, for someone to own a home or even a quarter acre lot with a mobile on it, it pushed it out of reach for so many people that those people really don't have any pity whatsoever. You know, on someone that can't meet their mortgage because they bought a $450,000 house. You know, I mean, it's just, I think a lot of people just aren't in touch with reality.
Angelo, you bring a great and important perspective to the table, and I'm so glad that you called in with it. We've got another caller in Bridgeport, Connecticut, speaking from another angle, maybe to the same point. Angelo, thanks for calling. Josh in Bridgeport, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, exactly along the lines of what Angelo was saying. I'm a lawyer with a nonprofit, and I work with very poor teenagers, and mostly in Bridgeport. And, you know, for them, all the stuff that your other callers and guests have been describing, that's been there every day for years. And I guess my question, especially for the school social worker from Sharon, is whether she thinks that this can be sort of a teaching moment for middle-class families, that kids can really start to see what goes on for the very poor people who may be near to them that they weren't thinking about before, now that that's come home to roost with their family.
People who were kind of living in a dream, maybe living in a bubble, may have more sympathy, more awareness now. Margie Mitlin, how about it? You heard Angelo, you heard Josh?
I think this is absolutely a teaching moment. I think that everyone on every level, no matter what their economic situation is, are feeling the effects of this downturn. And I think people are learning all kinds of lessons, including some of the positive ones about making do with less and using resources at home and with friends that, you know, in a whole different way. I think they're getting away from some of the, you know, maybe the computer games and some of the technology and kind of getting more in touch with friends and family and each other. And I think that that's a real positive. So there are definitely lessons.
Neil Howe, what about it? We've talked about family solidarity. This suggests that maybe an experience like this could breed some political solidarity as well, or at least a sense of shared experience that may have been missing for some time in this country. Does history bear that out? What do you expect?
Well, it certainly did during the Great Depression. Of course, that was the one aspect of the greatest generation was the generation that voted 85% for FDR and the New Deal, and of course became a titanic political generation later in their lives. We see the beginning of some of this in this new millennial generation. They're voting a lot more. They're a lot more politically active. Just over the past, youth voting rates have gone up steadily since the, you know, 96 presidential election. And we see a tremendous new engagement in politics. Youth volunteering, community service are now at record levels. And this ethic of the team, of the community, is very strong among millennials. When you interview them, when you talk to them, they like doing things in teams. They like using their technology in teams. And this again was one of the great lessons of the Great Depression, which has often been described as the decade of community and belonging, when people sort of reached out and found their fellow citizenship with all of the other members of their community. And that may well be another important lesson for this generation, which really distinguishes them from Gen Xers and their boomer parents.
Sue Schellenberger, when families sit down to try and make sense of this with their kids, do you hear them reaching back into history, reaching back into their own family history for lessons, for solace?
Definitely. I think for families like Laura, who called earlier and who is so really discouraged by the huge obstacles they face, sometimes the lessons of the past are very helpful. I hear families reaching back to tell about, you know, Grandpa, who was a banker in the Depression era and lost everything and then, you know, rebounded, or, you know, the family, even in the 80s when, you know, Aunt Mary, you know, hit hard times. These old stories can be helpful when everything else seems lost, because it tells you we are a family who has ups and downs, but we always come out of the downs, and we're going to be okay. So the lessons of the past can be helpful not only on the cosmic level that Neil looks at, but also on the family level with individual stories.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a call from Iowa City, Iowa, and Brent. Hi, Brent. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I would like to respond to the question you started the episode with, which is how children or the kids living through this are going to be affected for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they are affected for the rest of their lives.
In what way, Brent?
The most recent episode of This American Life suggested that perhaps the root cause of this recession is that our collective debt has matched our GDP for the first time since 1929. Mm-hmm. And I think that the reason for that is because our culture leads people to accept this idea that their quality or value as a person is defined by the things they own. And I just don't think that's true. I think people need to rise above that idea.
Don't be defined by the things you own. And there may be indeed a forced lesson for a generation. We'll see how that goes. Brent, thank you very much for that. Let me get one from April in Beverly, Massachusetts. April, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
Good. What do you see?
I'd just like to make the point, I think it's absolutely about time that this is all happening. And I don't mean that I don't want to see people uncomfortable, but we are the most entitled and spoiled culture that I can even pinpoint. Our children as well as our adults, everybody walks around with $150 sneakers and gold chains, and some of our children and adults don't even realize how the rest of the world lives, that children actually eat out of garbage dumps. We walk around blind to that. And I think a lot of us who have grown up in poverty understand that, but there are so many people who are living so superficial and just don't even get it, or maybe don't even care.
But do you really wish that on this upcoming generation, April?
No. I don't wish that, but I do wish that they begin to see that we are no more deserving than anyone else in the world, and that maybe we should conduct ourselves as such. Even when we have the money, we should certainly be a little bit more careful what we do with it, careful to take care of others, and not just be so super indulgent, self-indulgent.
April, thank you very much for your call. Let me get one from Sarah in Wakefield, Rhode Island. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you see?
Well, I wanted to offer a ray of to TJ. I was in a similar situation when I graduated college in 1991.
As TJ, who lost his job prospects at his dad's construction company that went bust, yeah.
Yeah, my dad was in a similar situation. He's actually what your guest refers to as the silent generation.
Mm-hmm.
We were both driving old cars, working retail, and for my generation, it was very disparaging because we had college degrees as Generation Xers, but we were working retail and cleaning toilets, and it was really tough. But I did end up finding a full-time job. I ended up going back to school. But I think for generations like my generation and TJ's, it just takes a while. And the jobs are out there, but it might take, you've got to be savvy. And it took me about a decade because I went back to school, but I did find something. And I think for generations like us, we just have to be more patient and not give up hope.
It's old-fashioned virtues. Patience is a virtue. Sarah, thank you very much for that. And I hope TJ takes it on board. Neil Howe, what are you expecting?
I think that's an important that last call. I think that's an important lesson is not being satisfied with too little. A couple of things we've already seen with this new generation of kids. One is that they have high expectations for the future. They're very comfortable with their parents. They get along with them well. A lot of them have already been moving back home with them. That we expect that to continue. But the other is, too, that there's already, long before this recession, there's been a long-term decline in the participation of teens in the labor market. Instead of getting odd jobs to get cash, they've been spending more time in school, doing internships, trying to, you know, plan their perfect careers. They're not as interested in getting cash right now. They're more interested in getting a long-term position. There was one caller, I love that remark, they can't outsource creativity. And if I can get a job that gives me a vital situation, some sort of creative input in an organization that assures me of that gives me a position that can't be commodified and can't be shipped abroad, then I have long-term security. And I think this is a generation where a lot of the young people are going to insist they may stay out of the labor market for a while. They may undergo a little bit privation, not a lot of cash on hand, but they're going to try to stick to their dream and try to wait and endure and be patient and not settle for less too quickly.
Neil Howe with Life Course Associates in Great Falls, Virginia, author of Millennials Rising. Mr. Howe, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Margie Mitlin, do you hear that determination in the generation you talk to, high schoolers?
I definitely do. I think that people are holding on to their dreams, and they're just willing to kind of go there more slowly and through some alternate paths. So I think that they know where they want to go. They're just having to go about it differently.
Be savvy and hold on to those dreams. Margie Mitlin, thank you very much for being with us today.
You are very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Sue Schellenberger with The Wall Street Journal, you are always great. We're grateful for your time today. Thank you so much for joining us, Sue.
It's my pleasure.
And many thanks today to Youth Radio for producing all the sound, the young voices you've heard through this hour. Special thanks to producer Rebecca Martin at Youth Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.